There is a silent killer in the electronics and automotive manufacturing industries. It isn't a supply chain shortage, not a labor strike. It's something much more subtle.
And frankly, much more expensive.
Exactly. It's this invisible erosion of profit margins. We call it overplating.
And we see it every day.
We do. We see scenarios where, you know, manufacturers are plating a 1 millimeter spot of gold.
A full millimeter.
Just to guarantee a 0.5 millimeter contact area.
That is just a massive, massive waste of precious metal. It really is. And it almost always happens because of something called tolerance stacking.
Tolerance stacking. Let's break that down.
Well, you have a stamper, a machine builder, and a plater, right? And the problem is, none of them are speaking the same language.
They're in their own worlds.
Completely. And that the tolerances from each step, they just pile up one on top of the other until your only safety net is to throw more gold at the problem.
And in an era where gold and palladium prices are, I mean, let's be honest, they're incredibly volatile.
Oh, completely.
That is a safety net that most companies simply cannot afford anymore. You can't just waste precious metal because your supply chain is fragmented.
You can't.
So the question we're asking today is, can you really afford to keep doing things the old way?
Or is it maybe time to look at the mathematics of vertical integration? Today, we are dismantling that old fragmented model.
We are.
We're going to look at how bridging that gap, you know, between the equipment design and the process execution is fundamentally changing the yield equation.
Welcome back to Reflections. I'm your host, Oliver Watts.
And I'm Emma Rhodes.
For those of you joining us for the first time, Reflections is really the show for the insiders.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to the engineers, the supply chain managers, the QA pros who are, you know, living and breathing precision manufacturing every single day.
And our mission here is really simple.
It is. We want to help you streamline your processes, slash your costs, and hit those, frankly, aggressive sustainability targets for mission-critical components.
And today, we are doing a really deep dive into something called the integrated build methodology. We're looking at a concept that's being called the unified engineering imperative.
It sounds impressive, doesn't it?
It does sound a bit grand.
But really, what we're talking about is bridging the gap between the people who design the plating equipment
and the people who actually run the plating lines.
Exactly. All to deliver superior reel-to-reel results.
It's about moving away from that that transactional relationship you have with your vendors.
Right.
And moving toward a model where the physics of the machine and the chemistry of the process are perfectly, and I mean perfectly, aligned.
Okay, so let's unpack this. First, I think we have to look at why the current model is so broken.
We have to.
We call this the status quo, or the old way. And it's essentially this three-silo workflow. But I want to pause here because silos is such a corporate buzzword, you know?
It is. It gets thrown around a lot.
So what does this actually look like on the ground in a real factory?
It's disparate. That's the best word for it. If you look at the traditional manufacturing landscape, you have three distinct entities, and they're all operating in almost total isolation from one another.
Okay, so who's player one?
Player one is the OEM, or the stamper. They're the ones defining the geometry of the part.
They make the shape.
They stamp the metal, create the shape, define the specs, and their main priority is throughput.
How fast can they punch it out?
Exactly. How fast can I punch this metal out?
Right. They're looking at strokes per minute. That's their metric.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the second player, the equipment vendor.
Right. And this is the company that sells the plating line. And usually they are selling a catalog standard machine.
An off-the-shelf solution.
Completely. It's a one-size-fits-all box. And their incentive is just to sell units. They aren't necessarily thinking about your specific, you know, funky connector geometry.
Yeah.
They're thinking about volume sales of their hardware.
Okay, so you've got the stamper and the machine builder. Who's the third silo?
The third player is the plating job shop. These are the folks who actually operate the line.
The ones in the middle.
They are caught right in the middle. They buy the machine from the vendor, and then they try to plate the parts that were sent over by the stamper.
So they're trying to make the chemistry work with a machine they didn't build.
And a part they didn't design.
And this is where the trouble starts, isn't it? We often describe it as the throw-it-over-the-wall mentality.
That's a perfect description. The stamper finishes their job, and they just, poof, throw the parts over the wall to the plater.
And the plater, who's struggling with the machine, they then try to throw the problem over the wall to the machine builder.
And it just creates this incredible constant friction. You have the stamper blaming the plater for handling damage.
You scratch my parts.
Right. And then you have the plater blaming the machine builder for poor fluid dynamics because the chemistry isn't flowing right.
Your machine doesn't work.
And then, full circle, you have the machine builder blaming the stamper, saying, well, your material is cambered, so of course it's not running straight.
So everyone's pointing fingers.
Everyone.
Ideally, you know, everyone would just sit in a room and figure it out. But in reality, these are different companies, different budgets.
Sometimes different continents.
Exactly. It's a blame game where everyone is technically right from their own perspective.
But the end result is that the customer, you, the listener, is losing money.
Hand over fist.
Precisely. And the core mathematical reason for this loss is what we touched on in the opening, tolerance stack up.
This is really the science of failure.
It is. And to understand it, you have to visualize the factory floor and just the sheer violence involved in creating these parts.
I think people forget that, that stamping is a violent process. We talk about precision, but at its core, we are smashing metal with tons and tons of force.
We absolutely are. And that violence introduces stress into the metal strip. So let's say that stamping die introduces a camber, a slight curvature of, say, plus or minus 2/1000ths of an inch.
So plus minus 0.002 inches.
Right. And to the naked eye, that strip looks perfectly straight.
Sure.
But in the world of precision interconnects, 2/1000ths of an inch is a canyon. It's huge.
Okay, so the strip is slightly curved. But the machine should be able to handle that, right? I mean, that's what the guides are for.
You would hope so. You really would. But now enter player two, the catalog machine builder.
The off-the-shelf guy.
That's him. He sold you a machine with standard guide widths. And those guides have their own tolerance, typically around plus or minus 5/1000ths of an inch.
So another plus minus 0.005. Why so much?
Well, they build slop into the system on purpose. They don't know exactly what material you're running, what thickness, what alloy. So they need a one-size-fits-all channel. They need it to be loose.
So now we have the camber from the stamping the curve of the metal, and it's fighting the slop in the machine guides.
And they compound. It's not just A plus B, it's worse. The strip is now essentially swimming in the guide channel. It's wandering back and forth.
So when it passes under the plating nozzle,
it might be 7/1000ths of an inch to the left, or it might be 3/1000ths to the right. The machine has absolutely no idea where the target actually is on that strip.
So if I'm the plater, I'm just looking at this moving target. I have a specification that says gold must cover this specific contact point. But the contact point keeps moving.
Exactly. And because you are liable for quality, you can't risk missing that spot.
No, the part gets rejected.
You can't risk it. So what do? You open the aperture, you spray a wider area of gold.
Just to be safe.
To make sure you hit that moving contact point, you have to spray a much bigger area. You are, by definition, overplating.
You are applying expensive precious metal gold, palladium, to non-functional areas of the part simply because you can't guarantee the alignment.
In this market, with these metal prices, that is essentially burning money. It's setting cash on fire.
If you are plating the shoulder of a pin that never even makes electrical contact,
simply because your machine guide was too loose,
you are throwing away margin on every single unit that runs through that line.
Every single one.
It's amazing when you think about it that way. The equipment and the part aren't talking to each other, so the default solution is just use more gold. But hold on, though. I want to push back on that for a second. Because manufacturers aren't stupid.
No, of course not.
If they're wasting gold, they know it. It shows up on a spreadsheet somewhere. Why hasn't this tolerance stack up been solved yet? Why is the old way still the standard if it burns so much money?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's not that they don't see the waste. They do.
Well, what is it?
It's that they view it as the cost of doing business. It's baked into their models. They look at the supply chain stamper here, plater there, and they just assume that friction is inevitable.
It's just the way it is.
It's the way it's always been. They don't feel they have the agency to fix it because they don't own the whole chain. They can't tell the stamper to change their die, and they can't tell the machine builder to change their guides. So they assume that safe is better than optimized.
Safe is expensive.
Very.
But it's not just the tolerance stack up, is it? There's also a huge issue with logistics. And I don't just mean shipping costs. I mean logistics as a defect generator.
Logistics is a massive and I think often a totally overlooked source of defects.
I agree.
We tend to think of logistics as just, you know, the cost of the truck. But in precision manufacturing, the physical movement of goods acts as a degradation mechanism. It actively harms the product.
Let's talk about oxidation. This is chemistry 101, but it has very real consequences for the bottom line.
It does. Oxidation begins the exact moment that fresh, clean metal is exposed to air.
Instantly.
The second it's stamped. When a stamper finishes a reel, that copper or that alloy is raw. It's vulnerable. If that reel sits on a loading dock waiting for a truck.
Which it does.
Or sits in a warehouse waiting for the plater to have capacity, that surface is degrading. It's gathering particulate matter, dust, and it's reacting with the atmosphere to form these invisible oxide layers.
Which means when it finally gets to the plater, days or weeks later, they have to work harder to clean it.
Much harder.
They have to use more aggressive activation chemistry, which then risks attacking the base metal itself.
Exactly. It narrows your entire process window. It makes everything more difficult. But then you have the transit itself, the actual truck ride.
I was reading about fretting. This is something I hadn't really considered before in this context.
Fretting, yeah.
It sounds like something a guitar player worries about, but here it's all about vibration.
Fretting corrosion. It's a huge issue, especially with soft copper alloys. Picture this. You have a reel of stamped parts. They're wound up with interleaving paper, which is supposed to protect the layers.
Lots of stew.
You throw that on a pallet, load it into a semi-truck, and drive it 500 miles down a bumpy highway. The truck is bouncing. The suspension is vibrating. And inside that reel, the metal layers are rubbing against that paper thousands and thousands of times a minute.
It's like taking a very, very fine sandpaper and just vibrating it against your precision part for 8 straight hours.
That's a perfect analogy. That constant vibration causes the paper to rub against the metal. It creates micro scratches. It creates debris. So before the part even gets to the plating bath, it's already damaged.
And the worst part is the plater gets the blame.
Always.
They plate over the scratch. The customer's QA department rejects it and says bad plating. But the damage happened on the highway.
And this brings us to the third big problem with the status quo, the innovation lag. We see this bureaucratic nightmare whenever a defect is identified.
This is the strategic frustration, isn't it? Let's say a plating shop identifies a problem. Maybe they're plating a deep draw connector and the solution exchange isn't good enough. The liquid isn't getting into the deep recesses of the part.
Okay, yeah. A common problem.
The plater, the operator on the line, he knows what needs to happen, right?
He knows. He knows he needs to change the angle of the sparger, the nozzle that sprays the fluid. He knows exactly what to do.
Ideally, he would just walk over and modify the machine.
But he can't. In a fragmented supply chain, he didn't build the machine, he just bought it. So to fix it, he has to contact the equipment vendor.
He has to fill out a form.
He has to describe the problem. The vendor has to quote a modification. They might have to ship parts back and forth for testing. It's a whole process.
We're talking weeks of downtime.
Yeah.
At best.
Weeks, absolutely. And during those weeks, you are either not producing at all, or you are producing suboptimal parts that you know could be better. The art of engineering, that intuitive ability to tweak and improve, is completely stifled by paperwork and the distance between the players.
It really paints a bleak picture of the old way.
Yeah.
Okay, let's pause and reset here for a moment.
Good idea.
Just to recap before we move on. First, we have these silos, creating tolerance stacking, which forces you to waste gold just to be safe. Second, the physical logistics of moving parts between vendors introduces oxidation, contamination, and those fretting scratches.
And third, innovation is stalled. It's just stuck because the person running the line didn't build the line, so they can't easily modify it to solve problems as they arise.
So that is the problem, a pretty big one.
It is.
Next, let's look at the fix, total vertical integration. But I want to be really clear here. We aren't just talking about a private equity firm buying two companies and slapping a new logo on them.
No, this is not financial engineering. This is actual physical engineering. And we're going to look at a specific case study here involving two companies, Precious Plate and their sister company, Precision Process.
This is where it gets really interesting because this represents a fundamental shift in philosophy. It's the difference between just owning a machine
and designing the machine.
That is the key distinction.
It is. Precious Plate doesn't just offer plating services. They leverage a deep internal collaboration with Precision Process, who are the equipment builders. And often these two entities are operating under the very same roof.
So just imagine the difference that makes. You don't have the stamper, the machine builder, and the plater in three different states. You have the machine builder and the operator co-located.
It completely eliminates that feedback lag we were just talking about.
Fun.
If Precious Plate is running a job and they see a way to improve the yield, maybe adjusting a tensioner or changing a masking belt, They don't have to call a vendor in another country.
No purchase order needed.
They can literally walk down the hall to the engineers at Precision Process and say, we need to change this. And they do it that afternoon.
It's the difference between customized and commoditized. Most shops buy a machine, tune it on, and then hope for the best. They try to adapt their process to the machine.
Correct. But true excellence comes from adapting the hardware to the process. In this model, if a defect occurs, Precious Plate owns the substrate, they own the chemistry, and they own the machine. There is no blame game.
There's no one else to point a finger at?
There are only corrections, only solutions.
That level of accountability is so rare. And the metrics, they back it up. We're seeing that co-locating the design and the engineering reduces new product launch timelines by up to 30%.
That is a massive number in the automotive or electronics world.
Huge.
Getting to market 30% faster just because you aren't waiting on vendor quotes or shipping prototype parts back and forth. I mean, that is a real tangible competitive advantage.
Okay, now let's get into the physics of it. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the philosophy, but how does this actually work on the line? We're going to do a deep dive into three specific technical areas where this integration really changes the game.
This is where the rubber meets the road.
Or I guess where the gold meets the copper.
Right. We're going to look at fluid dynamics, tension control, and selectivity.
Okay, let's start with deep dive area one, fluid dynamics and something called the Nernst diffusion layer. Now, for those of us who haven't opened a chemistry textbook in a while, let's break this down. What is the Nernst diffusion layer and why is it the enemy of speed?
Let's get microscopic for a second. Imagine the surface of that copper pin you're trying to plate. It's like a busy landing strip at a major airport.
Okay, I like that.
You have gold ions floating in the liquid solution, and they're the airplanes. They're all trying to land on the copper cathode to create the plating layer.
Okay, so the ions are the planes, the copper is the runway. Got it.
Right. But as soon as that first wave of planes lands, as soon as those first ions plate out, they leave behind a dead zone of liquid right next to the surface.
The dead zone.
That liquid is now empty. It has no more gold left in it. It's been depleted.
So the liquid right next to the metal part is literally starved of the metal you're trying to plate with.
Exactly. And that starved region is the Nernst diffusion layer. It acts like a shield or a barrier. The fresh gold ions floating further out in the tank, they can't get through that dead layer to land on the part.
It's stuck in a holding pattern.
A perfect analogy. They're circling, waiting for a chance to land. And the plating process basically chokes itself.
It suffocates.
It suffocates. And if you don't replenish that layer with fresh solution fast enough, the plating slows way down. Or worse, the deposit becomes burned or powdery.
That looks terrible.
It looks terrible and it doesn't adhere well because the chemistry literally starved to death right at the surface of your part.
Now, the standard solution in a generic shop is just to turn up the pump pressure.
Yeah.
Just blast it with more fluid.
Right. Just turn the fire hose on higher. But that's a blunt instrument. It's brute force.
Yeah.
And it doesn't account for complex geometries.
Right.
If you have a deep draw connector or a blind via, which is like a tiny dead end tunnel in your part, that fire hose approach doesn't work.
Yeah.
The fluid just rushes past the opening. It doesn't penetrate.
So the dead layer just sits inside that crevice, undisturbed.
Exactly. It's shielded from the flow.
So what is the integrated solution here? How does owning the machine building process solve a microscopic chemistry problem like this?
The solution is something called impingement cells. Because Precious Plate works directly with Precision Process, they can use computational fluid dynamics, or CFD, to model exactly how the fluid will move around the specific part they're plating.
So they are digitally simulating the flow before they even build the cell.
Yes, it's incredible. They run a simulation that shows the turbulence, the eddies, the dead spots, all the problem areas. And based on that simulation, Precision Process builds custom spargers.
These are custom nozzles.
Custom nozzles, yes. And they angle the jets of fluid to specifically scour that diffusion layer right at the high current density points where it matters most.
So instead of a generic spray, you have a sniper shot of fresh chemistry hitting exactly where the depletion is happening.
That's a great way to put it. It's a sniper shot. They can angle the jet to reach deep into that blind via or that difficult recess. And the result is you can plate at much higher speeds because you are constantly aggressively breaking that diffusion barrier.
And the quality.
You get finer grain structures and reduced porosity, which means a stronger, more reliable, more conductive part.
That is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's literally engineering the fluid flow to match the part geometry.
Yeah.
That's something you just cannot do with a catalog machine.
Yeah, impossible.
Okay, that's brilliant. Let's move to deep dive area two, tension control.
This is all about handling. It sounds simple, but it's critical. We're dealing with stamped contacts that are often incredibly delicate. We're talking about thin gauge copper alloys that are, you know, just a few thousandths of an inch thick.
And if you pull on them too hard, they act like taffy. They just stretch.
They stretch, and if they stretch, the pitch changes. The distance between the parts changes.
Right. If you stretch the strip, the distance between the parts expands, and now all your alignment is off for the next step.
Completely off. Standard plating lines often use these big, heavy capstans or accumulators that are designed for average materials. They're often driven by simple torque motors that just pull.
One speed, one force.
Exactly. But if you are running something delicate, those standard machines can easily stretch or bend the strip.
Or introduce that camber, which, as we already identified, is a killer in the first section.
Exactly. If the machine pulls unevenly, even slightly, it warps the strip. So the fix here is servo-driven tension control.
Okay.
Precision Process builds these systems and then custom calibrates them for the specific yield strength of the exact alloy being plated.
So the machine knows exactly how much tension that specific metal can take before it deforms.
Essentially, yes. It's not a dumb motor just pulling a belt. It's a smart, feedback-driven servo system. It monitors the tension thousands of times a second. If it feels a little too much resistance, it backs off. If it feels slack, it gently tightens.
Wow.
It ensures the strip moves through all the chemistry baths with this fluid grace. It prevents that camber and pitch distortion.
And why does that matter so much? Because if the strip is distorted, it won't line up with the mask for selective plating.
Correct. Which leads us perfectly into our third deep dive area, selectivity and synchronization.
This is the holy grail.
It really is.
Putting the gold exactly where you want it and absolutely nowhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Because at, what, $2,500 an ounce? You really don't want it anywhere else.
This is where the money is saved or lost. The technology here is called dynamic synchronization.
Dynamic synchronization. Okay, how does that work?
Imagine the plating line has eyes.
Okay.
There are optical sensors that are watching the stamped strip as it enters the machine. And they are looking for the pilot holes, those little registration holes on the side of the strip that are used for alignment.
So it's watching the pitch in real time. It's measuring the distance between the parts as they fly by at high speed.
Yes. And it's talking to the drive system for the masking belt. If it detects that the pitch is varying slightly, maybe due to that stamping stress we talked about, or even a slight thermal expansion from a heated bath.
The machine sees that change.
The machine sees it, and the system adjusts the speed of the masking belt in real time to perfectly match it.
So it's actively synchronizing the mask to the moving target of the strip.
It is. It's like a synchronized swimmer matching the pace of their partner perfectly, micro adjustment by micro adjustment. And the spec they achieve with this is just incredible. We are talking about selective spotting accuracy within plus or minus 0.05 millimeter.
5/100ths of a millimeter. That's razor sharp.
It is. And to get that, they also had to move away from the standard wheel and belt masking systems that notoriously leak.
Right. You get that fuzzy edge.
You do. So they designed custom masking tooling. Because they build the machine, they can build a mask that mates perfectly with the three-dimensional profile of the stamped part.
So you don't have any leakage under the mask. You get those razor-sharp edges on your spot or stripe.
Yeah.
You aren't fuzzing the edges and wasting gold on the periphery of your target?
None. Every ion goes where it's supposed to.
Okay, let's hit the reset button for a second. That was a lot of technical detail, but it's so crucial to understand why this whole integrated approach works. Can you just summarize the big technical wins here for us?
Okay, three main takeaways on the technical side. One, impingement cells. They use custom fluid dynamics, the CFD modeling, to break that diffusion barrier. That gives you better quality at much higher speeds.
Yeah, Aster was better.
Two, servo tension.
Yeah.
This protects those delicate alloys from stretching and deforming, which maintains the integrity of the part. And three, dynamic sync. This ensures the gold goes exactly where it's needed, with that incredible accuracy of plus or minus 0.05 millimeter.
Which brings us to the question every CFO, every supply chain manager is asking right now. Finally, what does this actually mean for the bottom line? Let's get into chapter four, the business case.
We have to start with the financial pillar. It's all about the gold savings. Gold is, without a doubt, the most significant cost driver in these components.
No question.
It dictates everything.
We mentioned the safety margin earlier. The idea that in a standard line, you have to plate a bigger spot than necessary just to be safe.
Right. In a standard setup, remember that tolerance stack up of 0.0007 inches we calculated earlier? You might plate a 1.00 meter trit just to guarantee a 0.5 millimeter contact area.
So you're doubling your consumption.
You're doubling your gold consumption just to buy insurance against bad alignment in your fragmented supply chain.
But with the integrated alignment using that dynamic sink and the custom masking,
precious plate can confidently reduce that spot size from 1.0 millimeters down to 0.6 millimeters.
So you go from 1 millimeter to 0.6 millimeters. That's a 40% reduction in the plated area.
40%. And now think about the scale. Over a production run of, say, 10 million pins.
A pretty standard run for an automotive part.
A standard run. That 40% reduction in safety margins creates six-figure savings.
Six figures.
That goes straight to the profit margin. It pays for the tooling 10 times over. It's not a small number.
That is just undeniable math. It's hard to argue with. But there is also a strategic pillar here, especially for the high-tech companies, right? We call this IP protection, or creating the black box.
This is so crucial for OEMs developing proprietary tech. I'm thinking EV battery interconnects, next-gen 5G components, medical devices.
Cutting-edge stuff.
Right. If you go to a standard job shop, they're using standard off-the-shelf equipment. Your competitors can buy that same equipment. If your competitor wants to replicate your process,
they just call the same machine vendor.
They call the machine vendor and buy the same line. There's no secret sauce.
But if you work with Precious Plate and Precision Process,
they can build custom cells and proprietary methods that simply do not exist on the open market. They can build a black box process just for you.
A unique process.
Completely unique. Your competitors cannot replicate it because they cannot buy the machine that makes it. The intellectual property is physically baked into the hardware itself.
That is a massive competitive moat. You're not just buying a plated part. You're buying a unique manufacturing capability that nobody else has.
It is. And finally, the third pillar here is scalability. We talked before about the risk of scale-up. That terrible moment when a prototype works fine in the lab, but the mass production line fails.
Because the prototype was made in a beaker, you know, by a PhD in a lab coat, and the production line is a giant high-speed tank. The fluid dynamics are completely different.
They're totally different. It's a classic problem. But here, Precision Process can fabricate prototype cells that exactly mimic the high-speed production line.
So they build a mini version of the real thing.
A perfect scaled-down replica. So when you transition from NTI new product introduction to mass production, it is absolutely seamless. There are no surprises regarding adhesion or distribution or porosity because the physics are identical from day one.
It's a seamless path from concept to millions of parts.
It is. No surprises.
Wow. We've covered a lot of ground today. From the broken old way of silos and blame games to the integrated solution where the machine builder and the plater are, for all intents and purposes, one and the same.
It really all comes down to what you could call the inevitable logic of integration.
That's a great phrase, the inevitable logic of integration.
I think it is inevitable. The market forces, miniaturization, cost volatility, the demand for higher reliability, they are making the siloed approach obsolete.
The dinosaur.
It is. You simply cannot achieve the necessary tolerances for tomorrow's technology when your supply chain is that fragmented. The math just doesn't work anymore.
The vision here is a production life cycle where that logistics friction we talked about is completely removed, where you aren't managing vendors and mediating arguments between them.
You're managing growth. You're focused on the next product.
It is the fusion of that creative ingenuity, what we call the art and the hard engineering rigor, the science.
That's what this model, what Precious Plate and Precision Process really represent.
And that brings us to the end of this deep dive. But we aren't just going to leave you with the theory. We want you to take action.
If you are an engineer or a supply chain manager listening to this, you know where your pain points are. You know which parts you are overplating.
The math we discussed today, that 40% reduction in spot size, that's not theoretical. That's tangible capital just sitting on your parts. If you're looking at a design right now that feels safe but expensive, you might want to challenge it.
So step one, stop compromising with generic plating lines. Stop accepting tolerance stack up as just a fact of life. It isn't.
Step two, you need to get the data. Join the email list and visit www.preciousplate.com. There is a specific resource there called the Design for Plating Checklist. Download it. It will help you see if your current designs are truly optimized or if you're leaving money on the table.
And step three, and honestly, this is the most important one, just call them. Pick up the phone.
Don't email. Call.
Call. Explicitly call a surface finishing engineer right now.
Yeah.
716-283-0690.
That's 716-283-0690. Talk to a human being who actually understands the physics we've been talking about.
Review your specs with them. Ask them about the integrated build. See what that math looks like for your specific part. I mean, it's a 5-minute conversation that could literally save your company 6 figures next year.
Keep reflecting, keep improving. We'll see you on the next deep dive.
Goodbye, everyone.
Yeah, now.